today on Vox Talks Economics, the impact of the cuts to US foreign aid. Welcome to another of our special episodes recorded at the CEPR Annual Symposium in Paris. My name is Tim Phillips. When the US cuts foreign aid, how many lives are lost? And can others step up to try to minimize that damage? Justin Sandefur is well qualified to speak on this topic. He leads Coefficient Giving's program on economic growth in low and middle income countries, and is one of the authors of a chapter on this topic in the recent CEPR book, The Economic Consequences of the Second Trump Administration. I caught up with him in Paris to ask him about the consequences of the cuts for global health. Justin, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Justin, on the 20th January 2025, I've got the quote here, the administration declared foreign aid antithetical to American values. Well, what did it mean by that?
Well, what it meant in practical terms was the closure of USAID, the US Agency for International Development. I don't want to dive too far into kind of the fever swamp of right-wing podcast think in the States that led to that, but I think a lot of the motivations were really around some of the democracy and governance promotion that USAID was doing, and this kind of portrayal of USAID as this hotbed of diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, which became a bad word in the Trump administration. And the agency was seen as super woke and progressive, and so needed to be reined in or shut down, according to Elon Musk and the kind of Doge crew.
So what actually happened when that was done?
The legality of it was all a little bit unclear because, of course, USAID is established by statute, and in principle, it should have required congressional approval to close the agency. That wasn't done. The administration felt that it could just act first and seek permission later. So the agency was virtually overnight kind of shuttered, and then a bunch of announcements were made about which contracts were going to be continued, which contracts were going to be canceled. You know, some stuff was going to be ported over to the State Department. A very charitable portrayal of it, or the hope for the transition, would have been something like what happened in the UK or in Australia, where you had an independent aid agency, DFID in the UK's case, which was then folded into the Foreign Commonwealth and now Development Office. That's not really what happened, though. USAID was shut down overnight. The Foreign Service officers in the field were left wondering what they do. Everyone running programs was left wondering what they do. And so there was this huge period of uncertainty. It coincided with the administration's announcement that they were going to do a 40-day pause on U.S. foreign assistance. And so for a while, it seemed like everything was stopped completely, including life-saving aid, including, you know, these frontline provision of HIV drugs and antimalarials. And so that stuff was all briefly completely put on pause.
If we look at programs around the world that were carrying on, was it really the case that literally doors were locked one day?
There are direct journalistic reports on the ground from Afghanistan of 200 WHO-administered clinics, which are funded by USAID, literally locking their physical doors and saying frontline health provision is no longer available because not just the USAID money is gone, but USAID has told us we have to stop these programs. There's other reporting on the ground from Sudan in the midst of obviously a huge humanitarian crisis of health programs being shut down, antiretrovirals no longer available, soup kitchens being shut down because not only is the USAID money not there, but they're not allowed to continue.
So what sectors are particularly affected by this, or is it across the board?
The short answer is it's basically across the board. Of course, the agency as a whole is gone, and that meant cuts to programming across sectors. Some sectors got 100% cut. USAID education work, at least last we know, is completely shut down. Some things, as I said, are going to be moved over to the State Department. Some things are covered by other federal agencies. I think probably the more pointed question is which sectors are spared. Because rhetorically, you know, the language from Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, and from the administration as a whole has been, oh, we're going to seek to preserve life-saving foreign assistance, which is generally being interpreted as global health and humanitarian programming. And a lot of what we try to do in the CEPR book chapter is show that, you know, that's really not been the case. There have been fairly sizable cuts to global health and humanitarian assistance as well.
The changes to foreign aid are just one of the ways in which the US has changed its approach to the rest of the world. In December 2025, we spoke to Adam Posen, president of the Peterson Institute for International Economics, about how countries will adjust to this new normal. Listen to our episode, The Future of Globalization, when you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
The exercise that you do in the chapter is extremely interesting, but also frightening. How many lives do we estimate that USAID was saving with its programs every year?
So we come up with a number that's in the order of something like 3 million lives. And for academics listening in, I want to be really upfront about the level of uncertainty that's
around. You have to make a lot of assumptions to get to that number.
And so we were doing this work at the same time journalists were reaching out to us and saying, give us, you know, what's an estimate? What do we think USAID is doing? Obviously, you know, it's a huge industry in trying to evaluate the impact of development programs, aid programs, public health programs more generally. And USAID is a giant agency with a huge variety of programs in different places. The way we came at this was, let's start with the biggest ticket items and what is kind of an order of magnitude estimate for how many lives they're saving overall and how many lives they're saving per dollar. And so in the case of U.S. foreign assistance, those biggest ticket items are going to be the HIV/AIDS support for malaria control under the president's malaria initiative, and then humanitarian assistance, which encompasses food aid, refugee assistance, and so on. We've got good academic research on the impact of these programs. The change in HIV mortality rates when the president's emergency program for AIDS and HIV relief, PEPFAR, was launched in the early 2000s. And so we've got pretty good numbers on estimates of the lives saved there. It was just a task of trawling through this academic literature on the impacts of these things and adding those up. It amounts to millions of lives a year.
So we have this estimate. Mm-hmm. You know in quite good detail how much money is being spent to get these results. Can we then back out of that some idea of the cost effectiveness in dollars per life saved?
We can. Again, with all the caveats about degrees of uncertainty, the numbers that we use in the chapter amount to something in the range of $2,000 to $3,000 per life saved under PEPFAR, the HIV/AIDS support, and then larger numbers for other things. We do this in a couple of different ways. One thing is to say an antiretroviral dose keeps a person alive. And you can look at how many people are on USAID-funded antiretrovirals and say, well, that's a reasonable first-order estimate of how many people's lives are being saved by USAID. Of course, it raises the question of, in the absence of USAID support, how much of those commodities would be provided anyway, how much of that care would be provided either by recipient governments, by other donors, and so on. And so we try to do both of those, kind of an adding up of just the bean counting exercise. And then the second is kind of an econometric exercise of studies that have tried to compare where USAID's working to where it's not over time and the difference in differences framework. We were expecting this massive gap between those two approaches. Uh-huh. And what we see for the case of HIV and malaria control is you don't see as huge a discrepancy as you would expect between those two estimates. There are other domains that we look at, like vaccines, where we do see a bigger gap. I mean, US is paying through support for Gavi for a huge number of vaccines, and we think actually some of that is substituting for other assistance. But in the big ticket HIV and malaria programs, it's less obvious that's the case.
How many lives does this cost?
Where we had data up through March, just a couple of months of the USAID shutdown, we were looking at something like a third of USAID programs being ended, contracts being canceled, with a lot of that hitting these big ticket global health programs. Just using parameters of lives saved per dollar and applying that to the number of contracts that are being canceled, you were looking at something on the order of 500,000 to 700,000 lives potentially to be lost per annum from the cuts.
Wow, that is extraordinary.
Yeah, it's a pretty sobering number.
We could make the argument, and the US administration clearly makes this argument, that it's not their business to be doing that and that other agencies should step up and be doing this job instead. Mm-hmm. So in the short term, what do we know has happened already? Has that begun to happen?
Well, the timing is pretty bad, right? Because we're in the midst of sort of a global contraction in foreign aid among major donors. Mm-hmm. I think the latest IMF numbers estimate that for Africa, you're looking at like a 16% contraction in overseas development assistance. So it's not that many other donors are in a position to say, yeah, we're ready to step in where USAID pulls back. They're also looking for places to pull back. I don't think we can anticipate that much substitution on that margin. The next question is, to what extent recipient governments themselves are going to be willing to increase their public health expenditure and replace these programs? You do see, and I think it's worth acknowledging here, that many recipient governments have mixed feelings about the fairly heavy-handed approach that USAID always took to much of its programming, which was heavily reliant on what USAID would call American implementing partners. So you've got American NGOs on the ground running these programs, doing the monitoring and evaluation, siloed American programs, which provoke tensions at times. And so some governments are saying, we're ready to step in and take charge of these things. I think probably the most high-profile case, and maybe some of the highest stakes in the world, is the case of Nigeria, with a really forward-looking Minister of Health, Mohamed Bate, a global star in the global health community, who has pushed for an additional $200 million budget allocation from the Nigerian government to replace some of this lost foreign assistance. Kenya has made motions in the same direction, but the amounts of money that are being discussed, the last I've seen, are something like 10% of the money that was lost in USAID programs. And I think many other countries are just going to be strapped for cash in order to fill these things in.
It's not just cash as well, isn't it? Because there is an organizational capacity that was provided to be able to deliver these life-saving services. That must be very difficult to replace, especially in the short run.
Absolutely. As I just said, many of these USAID programs, PEPFAR in the HIV case, are going to have been administered by US implementing partners. With a huge infrastructure on the ground, anybody who spent time on the front lines of public health in a low or lower middle income country, go to a rural health clinic and you're going to see UNICEF programming, you're going to see different NGOs providing services. There are critiques to be made of that system for sure. But in the short term, pulling out those programs means not just that you've lost support for purchasing the commodities, but that you've lost that whole implementation system. And I think that is going to be a real test of state capacity in many low-income countries. Even if, and that's a big if, Nigeria is able to come up with the budget allocation to replace this lost influx of foreign aid money, what systems are they going to rely on to manage the cold chain, to do the monitoring and evaluation, to make sure the drugs are getting where they're supposed to go, and so on and so forth?
These are very complex problems to solve, aren't they? So you have experience of that both at the front line and strategically. What would be your recommendation on how other governments should react at the moment, how donors could react at the moment, because there's no time to waste?
At the very macro level, in a period of retrenchment in foreign aid, and if the US is serious about pulling back even some of its global health commitments, it's worth considering whether the impact of the marginal dollar spent on global health is actually going up. If you polled CEPR economists and asked them, what can foreign aid do and what can't foreign aid do, big picture? I'd be curious to see the results. But I think if you ask them, can foreign aid substantially increase economic growth rates? Can foreign aid lead to consolidating democracy or establish peace or good governance to a competitive private sector economy? I have a feeling you're going to get varying degrees of skepticism along a lot of these big picture outcomes. I think there's a growing consensus that what foreign aid has been best at over the last multiple decades has been on improving public health, reducing mortality from infectious diseases and so on. First and foremost, in the case of HIV, malaria, and vaccine-preventable diseases. I think I would make the argument that the marginal dollar was perhaps best spent on that front. And as we're looking at cutting these existing programs, the case for filling in there becomes even stronger than before.
One reaction might be to say, okay, we'll put some stopgap funding and programs in, but the Trump administration will not be around forever. Wait it out.
Yeah.
Is that a viable strategy?
I think the risk and the fear is that US foreign assistance has been built on this bipartisan consensus for decades. The one big increase in U.S. foreign assistance that happened during the George W. Bush administration. Part of that was pouring money into Iraq and Afghanistan, which was maybe not money super well spent. But a big part of that was the creation of these big verticals in health, in HIV and malaria. And that was done under a Republican president and a Republican Congress. The question is whether that bipartisan consensus has been broken by this moves in the second Trump administration. And will that ever come back? Right now, the Trump administration has announced it wants to pivot to something called, I believe they're called America First Health Compacts. So instead of these global programs, you have these bilateral compacts that are going to be signed with each individual aid-receiving country. And Kenya has been the first guinea pig here.
We hope to sign many of these in the days to come. But the first one we're going to sign is with Kenya. They have stable and strong institutions, both in government and in the healthcare sector. We're going to be investing $1.6 billion in health assistance over the next 5 years.
On behalf of the government and people of Kenya, I express profound gratitude to the United States, to President Donald Trump, and to you, Marco, for the commitment of US dollars, $1.6 billion, to Kenya over the next 5 years.
It does involve large flows of assistance for HIV and other health programming in the short term. But it is claiming that it is a 5-year drawdown, at which point Kenya will be standing on its own feet and paying for the programs itself. For an HIV program that's been going for 22 years, that's still a fairly sudden shift. And so I guess one fear, at least a fear I have, is that these health compacts are going to be a way of formalizing a full withdrawal from U.S. assistance for global health.
It's a fascinating chapter in the book. It's a frightening one as well. Justin, thank you for talking about it.
Thank you very much.
The chapter is called The Impact of U.S. Foreign Aid Cuts on Global Health. The authors are Charles Kenny and Justin Sandefur, and of course it is in the book The Economic Consequences of the Second Trump Administration, a Preliminary Assessment, which is a free download from CEPR.org.
Vox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber, and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. In our next episode, the next generation of economists. Three of the PhD students at the symposium tell us about their research.